Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another installment of the Super Podcast right here on the Super Network at supermarcy.com. I am your host, Super Marcy, and I'm joined live and in person. Well, not really live when you listen to it, but we're actually sitting together in the same room. My co-host, the terrible Aussie, Bead Germain. Hello, Bead.
Hi, Marcy. How are you?
Not too bad. How are you?
Oh, not too bad, thanks. I've been pretty busy as of late, Marcy, with a mixture of work and a whole bunch of other stuff as well. So, but, you know, that's what life is like.
That is life for Bead. I have, unsurprisingly, been sick for like a month. I've had a cough that won't go away. So it pretty much explains our absence from doing the podcast.
Yeah, so we apologise to our listeners for in delays in podcasts, but yeah, the last few months have been
insane.
So we kind of figured just take a little break just for a little bit and then get back to recording it once everything kind of cools down a little.
Yep, but we are both here and Bede's birthday is coming up. Woo-hoo. So happy birthday to you.
Oh,
you're 102.
Actually, I will be 102.
Look like a monkey and you smell like one too.
What most people don't realize is that I'm actually am 102 and I do look like a monkey, so there we go.
So enough of those shenanigans. Yes, we are back. You now know why we haven't been around. Our last podcast was with Jimmy O about...
Yeah, I think it was September, wasn't it?
Yeah, something like that, with Nicolas Cage.
Nicolas Cage.
So, there we go. And just for everyone to know just what sort of an awesome friend I am, I just gave Bede for his birthday a signed picture of Nicolas Cage.
Indeed, it was probably definitely the highlight of my birthday this year. I don't think any other present's going to top it.
Yeah. Not even a $500 hooker.
Well, that could probably at least be second place. Second, just say. I mean, if she.
Sorry.
Yes.
Coughing and all in this podcast.
Yes.
Really?
Don't worry. Don't worry. We can cut that out.
Yeah, it's got to say, and everyone has to listen. All right. So. Now that the coughing's out of the way, hopefully. I was going to ask you, why are you a terrible wish alien for this episode of the podcast? Let's see if you know why.
Oh, there's some pretty good reasons why I'm a terrible Australian, Marcy, but I'm a terrible Australian because I have seen The Human Centipede 3. That pretty much summed up the entire movie.
There we go.
Yep.
Yep. Human centipedes in prison.
Exactly. And it has to say something where in a really already awful series of films, this one is the absolute worst of them all. Wow. Actually, I will say this. It actually made me angry while I was watching the movie. I think it was my pick as the worst film of 2015, I think last year it came out.
That's high praise.
That's high praise, exactly. But yeah, it is an absolute abomination. By this time, though, it just seems like the director, Tom Six, I think that's...
Tom Six, yeah.
He just seems to be on autopilot at this point, and he's just doing shocking things for the sake of doing it without any story or characters.
Yeah.
And Dieter Laser, you know, who played the Mad Doctor in the first one, he is back. And he gives, without a doubt, in this movie, the worst performance I have ever seen in a film.
Alrighty.
Like, he's like Tommy Wiseau. Like, that kind of acting, but more agonizingly bad.
So
and not fun to watch.
If they were both in a movie together...
He would come off as worse than Tommy Wiseau. At least Tommy Wiseau is interesting.
Yeah.
But Dieter Laser was fine in the first film because it kind of worked for the character, but... I almost felt kind of sad for him. It's like, dude, what are you doing? Like,
no.
It just was depressing, which coincidentally is kind of in hand with what we're doing for the podcast today.
Our topic for this episode, we've picked five films to make you depressed, or five films that'll really bring your mood down.
Yeah, because I think 2016 definitely has been
a downer
of a year, so yeah. It only makes sense that we do an episode
about being down.
Yeah, being down.
Getting you really sad.
Yes, because we're sadists like that. We just want everyone to feel as
bad as I want you to feel as bad as me. So, yeah, they're not like top five, there's just five picks for this one. So, I'll go first.
Yeah, sure.
While it's fresh in my mind. So, I'll just count them down in no particular order. So, number five I've picked is The War Zone, which was Tim Roth's directorial debut from 1999, I think.
Yes, it was, yeah.
Yeah, and the movie stars Ray Winstone. Do you say Winston? Is it Winston?
Ray Winston.
Ray Winston.
Yep.
And Tilda Swinton.
And Colin Farrell's in it, too.
He is, actually. So, why is this movie, like, suck your soul out depressing?
Oh.
Let's see. So it's basically you've got the family, and they move from like London to a rural area in England, and things start to unfold about this family that make it very uncomfortable.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't.
It's just very upsetting.
Yeah, it was like I remember you and Sam talking about it on a podcast we did together, and I still haven't seen the movie yet. But let's just. Not to say I would never see it, but I'm not in a huge rush to go see it just based on, like, what Sam was talking about that happens in the movie.
Yeah,
so.
It deals with a deep, dark family secret, and the movie's, like, depressing enough as it is.
Yep.
Because there's literally no life for these characters.
Yeah.
But then when you find out what's actually going on, which I won't reveal...
Yeah.
Because it's not that much of a popular movie. If people do actually want to see it, they can. But yeah, there's a deep family secret. And once you find out, and then as the film goes on, it gets even worse. And by the end of this movie, you're just ready to, I don't know what the right word is, smash your head against a brick wall, maybe. Mm. It's very confronting. It's very powerful. It's very raw. But he picked up a really good cast for his movie.
I think
he's made another movie since.
Yeah, I think he's... Yeah, I'm not sure what it's called, but I think it's only, like, his first one as a director in, like, since that movie.
Yeah.
So it's, like, a long time coming.
Yeah, so this one's not an easy one to find, but I would say proceed with caution.
Yeah.
While it is, like, there's things that make it a really good movie, it's just... It's one of those movies you wouldn't really want to watch more than once.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, it's kind of one of those soul-sucking films. Yeah, that's not going to be a lot of conversation for me because Bede hasn't seen it.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'll let Bede state his fifth one.
Alrighty. My first pick is a film that we kind of have seen and we have talked about many times in the past. And I think it's a good one to discuss for this one, because I think, unlike some of the films in our list, this one at least has a hopeful note to it, and that's Precious, based on the novel Push by Sapphire.
Ah, Precious.
Yes, yeah, so what can we say about this film? Like, it has been quite a few years since I last seen it, but I always remembered how just a powerful film it was, particularly with Gabourey Sidibe's performance as the title character. She was phenomenal. Should have won Best Actress that year for sure. But yeah, it's just really powerful stuff. I'm not going to say it's a perfect film, because there are some kind of, you know, sort of odd choices with some of the, like, dream sequences and stuff like that. But sort of watching this character as she sort of struggles with, you know, with school,
she lives in, you know, poverty.
Yeah, and also with her monstrous mother, who's played brilliantly by Monique.
Yeah, we will support that woman.
Yeah, exactly. Like, she deservedly won
Oscar. She won an Oscar and she deserved it.
Yeah,
I don't care what anyone says.
Yeah, just watching just, like, her all through these struggles, but at the same time, there is a hopeful... And, like, she gets a lot of shit thrown at her throughout the whole movie. Like, really bad stuff. But I think... At the same time, though, despite that, there is kind of a hopeful note, because it's her kind of rising above
that
and kind of standing up to her mother and trying to find her way to get out. Like, even though she's gone through so much in the film, that is so depressing, but watching her kind of overcome that, her struggles, is also very uplifting, but at the same time, it doesn't give like a move the film like a.
It's not a feel good.
Yeah, not a feel good, but it's more of a hopeful ending. That's probably
you
why
you just think this girl might actually have a chance.
Yeah. And it's just a great film. And I think, like I said, I haven't seen it for a few years now, but it's one I definitely always held in high regard since it came out. And I think anyone who hasn't seen it since then, or hasn't seen it, or you know, recently or whatever, should check it out again. I think it's just a really great
check
film.
It out. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
It's not easy to watch. It's confronting. It's got a lot of darkness to it. But like the character of the mother that Monique plays is one of the most vile and disgusting characters you will see on film.
Yeah, and also there's not...
I mean, it's terrifying. Oh, yeah. People like that do exist and they're probably worse.
Yeah, but also what's interesting is that the film also gives a sort of empathetic approach to it as well, because there's this big scene towards the end, which I won't spoil, where you kind of understand why Precious's mother hates her so much. And the film, like, gives her that moment to kind of understand it, but at the same time not sympathize with her as well.
Yeah,
so at least that makes her not just say a one-dimensional kind of bad guy.
There is a bit more of it.
But it's also when you find out why, it just adds to the more disturbing factor of the film.
Yeah. So yeah, definitely it's a fantastic movie, but it is so hard to watch.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not one you're going to want to watch every single day of your life.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah. So my next one, I think a lot of people do talk about this movie, but I don't think we've really had much of a discussion on it on the podcast. And this is a movie that really does make you want to, again, smash your head against the wall.
Yeah.
Be Requiem for a Dream from Darren Aronofsky.
Yeah.
Starring Jared Leto, Jennifer Connelly,
Marlon Wayans, and Ellen Burstyn. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is a film about addiction.
Yeah.
And it is one of the scarier movies dealing with that subject.
Yeah, I mean, if you were thinking like, oh, maybe I should try drugs and stuff, not like the really hard stuff, watch Requiem for a Dream and you'd be like, nope, don't want to do that.
No. Yeah, so it deals with, like, Jared Leto's character is on, is it heroin?
I think so, yeah, heroin, yeah.
Well, he's injecting it. So there's that whole thing with the drugs and how it spirals out of control. And then Ellen Burstyn's character becomes sort of obsessed about a chance to appear on a game show. Yeah. And she's like, oh, she's got to look good for it.
Yeah, she starts taking pills.
You know, she starts taking pills to lose weight and stuff. And again, it just becomes a crazy addiction.
Yeah.
And it's so hard to watch.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this is not a movie you can really watch more than once or twice.
Honestly. Yeah, I've only ever seen it once. And, like, it's still, like, you know...
It's still there.
Yeah, it's still there. Like, you don't forget that. Even my friend who saw it, too, he was... Like, he hasn't seen it in years either, but he just, you know...
Everyone still talks about it.
Yeah, everyone still talks about it. Like, it's one of those movies that leaves such an impact on you when you watch it that you just don't forget it, like, years later.
Yeah, so this... Yeah, I saw this and I'm like, I'm not doing drugs. I'm not injecting myself with anything ever.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, there's a point in the movie where he's just injecting himself so much. Like, forget having track marks. His arm just becomes... And at this point, like a few years ago, when I was having a lot of health issues, unknown health issues, and I was having blood tests all the time, and it looked like I had track marks on my arm. And I'd make the joke going, God, I look like Jared Leto in Requiem for a Dream. Bit of a dark joke, but a joke nevertheless. Yeah.
But that's only just the tip of the iceberg. Where it goes, especially with Jennifer Connelly's character, where it happens to her in the last half of the movie.
Yep.
You don't forget that either.
Nope.
And I will never look at Keith David the same way.
Yep, it is messed up. It's, things that happen to people that get themselves into these situations.
Hmm.
And you just know, like, things are probably so much worse for a lot of people.
Yeah.
I mean, at least in Australia, ICE is a really big drug issue right now.
Yep.
And the way that's messed people up is just, someone needs to do a movie about that.
Yep.
It's just messed up. People that are on that stuff, it deteriorates them. They look horrible. Their teeth fall out. They do stupid shit.
Yep.
You know, it's absolutely horrible. Like, yeah. Just don't do drugs, kids, alright?
Exactly. Just don't do any drugs whatsoever.
If you want to do drugs, slightly puff the magic dragon, yeah. You'll be fine.
Don't even take Panadol. Okay, use Panadol, but nothing else.
Panadol, Tylenol, Advil, just in normal, small doses. Never do Oxycontin.
Exactly.
Oxycontin.
Yeah.
none of that shit, right?
Drugs are bad.
Drugs are bad, girl. Actually, I think I want to change one of my picks. I've thought of something else that's just as terrible, but I'll let be.
Okay, well, since you picked a film by Darren Aronofsky, who pretty much has a his entire biography is films that just you know, make you want to, like, why are you doing, why are you doing this to me? It's one, probably not as depressing as Requiem for a Dream, but still depressing, is The Wrestler with Mickey Rourke.
Yeah, see, I'd actually thought about that as well.
Yeah.
But, and you know, being that I'm the big wrestling nerd, geek, whatever you want to call it, this movie just hit me hard. I cried so much watching this movie because it's just so, there's a lot of realism in there.
Yeah, it really sort of captures that sort of authenticity of wrestling, especially just like the indie wrestling circuit.
Yeah.
Really well.
You know, seeing these has-beens trying to sell their autographs for $10 at the back of somewhere, it's like, it's sad.
Yeah.
I'm always in tears thinking about it. It's how much wrestling affects me, like, seriously.
Yeah, and Mickey Rourke is just phenomenal.
What a performance.
Oh, yeah, it's the performance of a lifetime.
It is.
And it's kind of funny that Nicolas Cage almost was going to play that role.
Can you imagine? I'm a wrestler. I'm going to beat up
this
guy. I just
want to see Nicolas Cage with Mickey Rourke's hair in that movie.
Yeah.
But we actually dropped out and...
Nicolas Cage for the remake.
Yeah, exactly.
By Werner Herzog.
Exactly.
Done.
but yeah, I mean, it's Nicolas... I mean, Mickey Rourke... But it's also not just that, because Mickey Rourke trying to figure out where he wants to go, because his career's basically...
His career's over. It's like, pretty over, what do I have in life now?
Yeah, like, he's trying to kind of start this relationship with this exotic dancer played by Marissa Tomei, who's equally brilliant, who kind of, in a way, kind of also is on... the same kind of journey as well, because she's getting older and everything, and also him trying to regain a relationship with his absentee daughter, played by Evan Rachel Wood, and seeing where that goes, and then him trying to kind of have a normal life, but circumstances kind of happen to him that, you know, kind of put that in jeopardy. So, and where it goes in the end, and it also, like, in a lot of ways, like,
it's very ambiguous ending.
Ambiguous ending, but also kind of almost autobiographical in a way, because you can tell that what happens in the film, it could also mirror everything that happened in Mickey Rourke's life up to that point in terms of his career and personal life. So
yeah, absolutely.
Because it adds that authenticity to it. But also something, he also rewrote some of his dialogue.
Yeah.
Like that big speech he has at the end, he wrote all that. So
yeah, it's a confronting movie. I think a lot of people that weren't really too familiar with wrestling would have been a big eye-opener for a lot of, like, what happens. And you see it now, like, so many guys doing independence, just trying to still be somebody, but still dealing with so much. But I'd actually highly recommend, I don't know if you want to do it as a double bill or just something to watch, is The Resurrection of Jake the Snake.
Yeah.
At least that, you don't want to hit your head against a brick wall. That is really... uplifting. It's a great story. It's one that you watch it and you'll be like, if he can overcome what he's overcome, anything is possible. And just all hail Diamond Dallas Page. The Wrestler is fantastic.
It's an amazing movie. Again, if you haven't seen that for a while, check it out.
I changed one of my picks because one I had picked, I think we've talked about before. And I've probably brought this movie up, but just thinking about movies that make you want to, you know, smack your head against a brick wall, movies that want to make you never want to do something ever. And movies that really probably make you want to just smash in the head youth of today and just tell them to behave themselves.
Yep.
We're talking about 1995's Kids from Larry Clark.
Yeah, as soon as you said what you'd lead up to it, I think it's Kids.
It's Kids, yeah. This movie, seriously, I saw this movie when I was 10, which is not when you should be watching this movie. Although some of the characters in the movie are almost that young.
Yeah.
And this movie scared me away from ever wanting to have sex with anyone.
Mm.
That's why I waited so long. My virginity. I'm still there. No, I'm not really a virgin.
I think I only saw Kids for the first time, like, maybe a few years ago. Mm. Like, even then, like, it was still a very confronting film. But to be fair, I actually read the script to that, like, way years in advance. So I knew what to expect. But even then, just watching the film, it's just, like, that kind of almost documentary kind of style that Larry Clark applies. Because I think, wasn't he a photographer and documentary guy before that
film? Least I know he was a photographer.
Yeah, so he...
A well-known photographer, at least.
This was his first film.
Probably photographing underage kids.
Yeah, pretty much, because he's made a whole career out of that.
Yeah,
but that's a whole different story. But but with this film, though, like, he really sort of catches that sort of, again, the authenticity of what kids were going through at the time, especially around that era.
Yeah.
It's New York, was it? Was it New York? Yeah. So, like, and also casting pretty much unknowns. Like, he had a couple of future stars, like Chloe Sevigny, Rosario Dawson, who were, like, you watch that film and you can see, like, where they were going to go somewhere because they were just both talented. But, it's really incredibly depressing film.
Yeah.
Especially with one character in particular and his plot, which we won't spoil, but let's just say it is fucked up.
Let's just say his nickname is the Virgin Surgeon.
Yeah.
And, it's disgusting.
It is. And it just makes your skin crawl.
Yeah, but this movie sort of deals with the horrors of underage sex, unprotected sex.
Yeah.
All that sort of stuff. The stupidity of kids.
Mm. Trying to grow up. And
why I think even, like, now it's probably more relevant in the way that there's a reason why places... in America, like, the clinics need to be open, because where the hell are kids going to turn to, especially if they don't have anyone, if they need something.
Yeah.
Like, you see them go in, they're getting tested and all this stuff. Like, that stuff needs to be there, because kids are going to do stupid shit.
Yeah.
You can only do so much to stop that.
Yeah.
But I think it just shows a real need for those kind of clinics where, you know, teenagers can go get themselves checked, have pregnancy tests, get birth control, whatever. Get condoms.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it's very important.
Yeah, it's important.
But it is a very disturbing and raw movie. And seeing it at like 10 was probably not the best idea.
But, I don't know. Even seeing it at like 30 was probably not the best
idea. Yeah, that movie seriously scared me away from having sex for like 9 years. And then people can do math. They can wake up and I'll watch my
movie. Yes, exactly.
So, it's hard to recommend this movie. It's hard to say if it's a good movie.
Yeah, that's kind of the
elements.
Yeah, there's good elements.
It's just very nonsensical, and I think that comes with Harmony Korine.
Yeah, Harmony Korine and David Clark as the director. Larry Clark, sorry.
Yeah.
Larry Clark is the director.
I don't get Harmony Korine. I have seen some of his movies, and I just don't get it. They're not for me, I don't think.
Yeah.
I don't know. For me, it's just very nonsensical. Maybe if I rewatch them now, I might feel different. Yeah.
Well, it has to say something when his last film, Spring Breakers, is like his most mainstream film that he's done.
Yeah, like, I saw Gummo and I was just like, what the fuck did I just watch?
Yeah, I think maybe skip the early ones and just go straight to Spring Breakers.
Yeah, although, like, when we met Val Kilmer, he had nothing but the nicest things to say about him. I think he did a short movie with him or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, the nicest things to say about him. I don't know if anyone has nice things to say about Larry Clark, but,
yeah. Yeah, but, again, that's a whole different story right there.
Yeah, see, this for me, one of the most disturbing movies, one of the most confronting movies, one of the most depressing movies. you'll want to hang your head on a brick wall, I think.
Yeah,
hang your head, smash your head on a brick wall.
Exactly.
We're getting through these a bit too quickly.
No, we got so many. But I guess I'll go with my next one. This film is, well, I think I absolutely love this film, and a lot of people kind of, I guess.
I'm just getting a drink, keep going.
Okay. I guess a lot of people are kind of sort of down on this one, mainly because it sort of came out in 1980, and it actually won the Oscar for Best Picture, but it kind of beat out a film that that a lot of people thought that deserved it a lot more, and that film is Ordinary People, which directed
by... I actually haven't seen Ordinary People.
It is a really great movie. I can understand why some people were I wouldn't say like it shouldn't have won every, because the film I'm talking about that it beat out was Raging Bull, which, you know, a lot of people consider an absolute masterpiece and a classic. It probably Scorsese's best film, but But I don't want to take that away from Ordinary People, because it is still a really great film and just incredibly sort of powerful one about this family who are Donald Sutherland, Mary Tyler.
I think I know what it's about. So
yeah, well, that's why I described the plot now. It's about this family who are Donald Sutherland, Mary Tyler Moore, and Timothy Hutton. And they're sort of overcoming a tragedy that happened because their oldest son died in an accident.
Yeah.
And it's just them trying to sort of figure out how to move on from that. And there's a sort of a... And particularly Timothy Hutton's character, who kind of is trying to work himself through that because he feels that he was responsible for his brother's accident.
Yeah.
And what happens. And it's him trying to figure out... Him coming to terms with his own guilt, whether he's guilty of it or not, and also like his parents and how they feel, because even his mum kind of almost resents him, and it's just and Donald Sutherland is kind of trying to be the, you know, that sort of tissue between them, trying to get them together and all that, and it is incredibly powerful, but very sensitively done, because it was actually Robert Redford's directorial debut, and it's got brilliant performances. And it's just, and it doesn't go for sentimentality at all, but it approaches it in a very honest and very sort of raw, maybe not as raw as something like The War Zone, but still in a very honest way that, because I don't think there's even a score in the film from what I remember, or if there is, there's barely one in there but it's pretty powerful stuff and just these and also Timothy Hutton, because I believe it was his acting debut as well. And he won the Oscar for supporting actor.
Oh, okay. Didn't
and know. Sort of a bit of trivia, like a lot of what he was going through with depression and guilt of his character and all that, he kind of took that from personal experience, because I think his father died like a few weeks beforehand.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Beforehand, so he put that into his performance. So it's just a really powerful film, and if people haven't seen it, just give it a watch.
Yeah,
like,
I need to actually watch it.
Yeah, it is a great film, and one that maybe it's probably the least depressing of the ones we're talking about, but it's still an incredibly moving film about family and also a father, like, how parents deal, how a family deals with grief. So, so it's definitely one checking out. Definitely check it out as well, Marcia, since I know you haven't seen it yet. So.
Yeah, actually, I thought of something else, and now I can't. I thought of it twice, now I can't think back to what it was. I did have something else in mind, because I thought one on my list I've reviewed, and I think I've talked about it before, that's why I thought I'll change it up, but now I can't remember what that movie was.
Hopefully it'll come back very soon.
I can't remember what I was thinking of. It's like really weird. Maybe it was worth mentioning, but freaking hell, I can't think of what it is. And I'm like, wouldn't it have been on both our lists? But why can't I think of what it is now? if I think of what it is later, I'll mention it, but I'll go with what I've picked. Go with something I only saw, I think, last year. And that's Grave of the Fireflies.
Yes.
I
can't question that pick at all.
I don't know if I ever want to watch that movie again.
Yeah.
You know what? It is a brilliant movie.
Yeah.
From top to bottom, I think it's phenomenal. But its subject matter is so difficult. And it's this beautifully animated movie.
Yeah.
But my God, does it rip your heart out.
Yeah.
Shred it to little pieces, glue it back together, rips it out again, puts it through a shredder. I mean, holy shit. I was crying.
Yeah,
definitely. There's no way you can't cry watching this movie. Yeah. You have no soul.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the most powerful films I've ever seen. And in fact, and not just because, an animated film, but just a all-round film altogether.
Yeah, this one takes place during World War II.
Yeah, and follows a brother and sister.
Yeah, who are pretty much homeless, and they have to they try to overcome not having family, not having anywhere to live, not having food.
That's why the movie is so depressing, because it just deals with so much, but that's the thing, though. It's like, the animation is beautiful. It's a great film. Like I said, regardless whether it's animated or not, it's just so good. But it's definitely, it's one that I've always wanted to go check out at some point. But again, with a lot of these films that we're talking about, most of the time they are kind of hard to go back and rewatch.
Yeah, this one I don't know if I'd ever be able to.
Yeah.
It's something you just watch once and it's with you, whether you like it or not. But someone that I know, who probably would never listen to the podcast anyway, described it to someone as, it's a film about two kids starving to death.
Jeez.
And that's, yeah, it's one way to put it.
Yeah, that's pretty much one way to put the movie.
Yeah,
so.
It's just, it's a gut punch, and then a heart punch, and then a head punch, and every other punch.
It's every other punch. It's punches
yeah,
all over
it's
the place.
So, it's so just, it's difficult to watch, because you're sort of like just hoping, but then
yeah,
it's like you don't fucking hope for anything.
Yeah.
Life is bad and dark and nothing ever good happens. That's this movie in a nutshell.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think it's just a phenomenal, fantastic film. But, fucking hell. There's like, no going back to watch this one.
Yeah.
It's really not. It's. I mean, I recommend you watch it once and be prepared to just go through every emotion known to man. But, yeah. Grave of the Fireflies. And now I'm really upset that I can't think of the other one.
Yeah. That's all right. Well, I'll go into my next one while you figure the one that you figure of. This one, again, is another Best Picture Oscar winner. And that's a film. I don't yet had a chance to see this one yet. And that's 12 Years a Slave, which pretty much sums it all up in the title of the movie.
Yeah.
But it does have sort of a hopeful ending, but at the same time, it's just follow. I guess for those who don't know the story, it's about a man played by Chiwetel Ejiofor, who's sort of a
Is that how you say his name?
Yeah, that's how you say his name. Yeah. It took me forever to figure out how to say his name properly, but he sort of plays sort of an African American who's free, who has never been a slave, and then one he has a family and everything, very well respected. And then one day he's kidnapped and then put into slavery. And it kind of follows his journey over the course of 12 years while going from different plantation to plantation over the course of 12 years and all the horrors that inflict upon him and those around him while in slavery. And it's not an easy film to watch because there are a lot of scenes of torture, like brutal whippings and stuff like that and other kind of really bad stuff. But at the same time, though, it kind of really sort of gives you the sort of the quickly realize, like we with slavery and all that, we all, you and I both know, around that time in American history, it was terrible, like awful. There's no justification of it at all.
Yeah.
But kind of like Schindler's List, though, which is another equally depressing film, it kind of, once you kind of see a sort of a filmic version that takes a really sort of brutal, honest, raw look at that, you just realize the sort of, you fully grasp it and everything. Like, even then, just, like, it is, like you said, it is a very powerful film, brilliant performances. Like, Chiwetel Ejiofor is, you follow his journey, he's so great. And also, particularly the scenes where he meets one monstrous slave owner played by Michael Fassbender, who is just
horrible.
He's absolutely horrible, but brilliant in the film. And not also just what happens to his, I mean, Chiwetel's character, but also when he meets Lupita Nyong'o's character, because she basically comes like this infatuation to Michael Fassbender's character, and she goes through a lot as well. And there's like this, like, spoilers, this 10-minute whipping scene.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, and all done in one continuous long take.
Oh, Jesus.
And, but that's, and it is very depressing, but I think director Steve McQueen, I think he wanted to set out to make a film that was unflinching about slavery. And I think that's the only way you can do it. You can't sugarcoat it or anything like that, because that wouldn't be honest to what happened. And,
I
said, it's not an easy film to watch. Unlike the other films I've seen, I've actually seen this movie more than once, but it's just still an incredibly powerful story. And like I said, it does have a hopeful note at the end of it, but it kind of, one thing's for sure, you don't forget it long after you watch it. Again, if you haven't seen it, check it out, but I can understand people not being in a rush to see it. So
yeah, I've kind of been hesitant to see it.
But it definitely deserved the Best Picture Oscar for sure.
Yeah. I still can't think of the other one that I had in my head. I don't know why. I know it's one we've both seen. It's soul-sucking, destroying, but I can't think of what it is now. So I'll go with this one. I think I've talked about it before. I'm sure everyone's talked about this movie. But is another one I saw once at the movies. I've never seen it again. I've listened to the soundtrack, but I've still never seen the movie again.
Mm.
I don't know if I can. It's that difficult to watch.
Yeah.
And that is Dancer in the Dark,
yeah.
Which was, I think it was Bjork's only movie.
I think she has acted since then, but yeah, I think for a while there she did not want to do acting.
She just did not.
Yeah, because her and Lars von Trier did not get on well.
And she went through a lot doing this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. At least she wore the pretty swan to the Oscars. That was
exactly.
Awesome.
But
yeah, this... Oof, how do you even describe this movie? She's blind. Well, she's mostly blind.
Yeah.
Well, she is blind.
Yeah.
Sort of, it's that poor town.
Yeah.
Where she's trying to get money.
To help her son. Because she knows she's going blind.
Yeah.
And she knows that she doesn't have enough time left, so she basically tries to save money for her son.
Her son, yeah. If he gets the surgery, he won't be blind.
Yeah.
Sort of save his vision.
Yeah, because he's losing his as well. Because
yeah.
That's been a while since I've seen the
yeah,
movie.
Yeah,
now that I remember, yeah, that's
yeah.
exactly why she's
but,
doing
it. Yeah, somebody discovers her money.
Yeah.
And I think in defending herself, she kills him.
Yep.
And then you go through the trial where she doesn't want her son to know what was going on and she won't admit what happened.
Yeah.
And she's sentenced to die.
Yeah.
And that's the movie.
Yeah, well, leave it to Lars von Trier.
I was going to say, fuck you, Mr. von Trier.
Yeah, I know. He's made an entire... It would be really weird if Lars von Trier ever made a movie with a happy ending one of these days, but...
If he ever made a movie that ever wanted to make you happy in some way,
yeah,
just watch out, because somebody, like, switched bodies with him or something. But it's got... I love the cast, because
yeah.
you've got Bjork, you've got Catherine Deneuve, David Morse, Peter Stormare, oh, I can't say his name properly, and you had... as well as the music by Bjork, I think
yeah.
it was Tom York.
Yeah, yeah. The soundtrack
well.
Is...
It's an incredible
say, yeah.
soundtrack.
We should say the movie is also a musical
yeah.
as well. Probably the most depressing musical of all time, but...
Yeah.
But
The soundtrack is just phenomenal.
Mm.
It's one of the best movie soundtracks ever. Or
yeah, yeah, exactly. But yeah, Bjork's performance is like one for the... That's like... I think I'd put her down as like my performance of the decade, like...
And it's incredible.
It's an incredible performance, and like, but I mean, yeah, as much difficulty as she had with Lars von Trier, I think every actor at some point does.
Yeah.
But I mean, the fact that he can get these brilliant performances out of people kind of shows, like,
yeah.
either. But I agree. It's a brilliant film. I haven't seen it in years, but I still think about it every now and again.
Yeah,
so
it's always... I think about it a lot, and it's just... It's so, like, going to be one. I don't know if I'll ever be able to watch it again.
Yeah.
Or if I do, I'll just have a marathon of these five movies. And just, at the end, I'll just jump off the roof.
Oh, geez.
And make sure I got a soft landing.
As long as that soft landing is Lars von Trier.
Yeah, maybe. I'll put him, Larry Clark, Darren Aronofsky.
They would make the most... depressing anthology film of all time if they ever did one together.
Oh my god.
Actually, put Gaspar Noé in there as well. Then you
yeah.
got the coup de grace.
Yeah. But yeah, what I mean, it's a phenomenal movie. Like,
yeah.
everything about it, I think, is just amazing, but it's just one of those difficult watches.
Yeah.
And I think I was 16 when I saw it.
I think I saw it...
I saw it, like, when it came out at the cinema.
I think I saw it in about maybe 7 years ago, I'd say. Yeah, so, but...
Yeah, seeing it when it first came out at the cinema.
Yeah.
When you're, like, 16, 17,
mm-hmm.
yeah. Very, very, not as bad as watching kids at 10.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and I still can't believe I can't think of this other movie. Why didn't I just write it down? I seriously can't even think of who's in it, what movie it was.
Well, did anything in particular about it could... I can probably help you.
Oh, I know we've both seen it, and I know it's incredibly depressing.
Hmm.
Which could be a lot of things.
It could be a lot of things.
Yeah. I don't know why I can't think of what it is, though.
It's not Flight, is it?
No.
That movie's depressing for other reasons.
Yeah, I could say, you know, another sort of soul-sucking movie could be, like, Lost Highway.
Well, I haven't seen Lost Highway
just
yet.
Considering just how weird and everything, and what it could potentially be dealing with, depending on how
you... Oh, now I know which one you're talking about. Is it a moor?
No, but that's another insane one that I didn't think of.
Yeah, because that's the one where it's like picking, what's the depressing movie we've seen together? I'm picking a moor, obviously.
Yeah, we could talk about
that. Yeah, let's talk about that. I mean, yeah.
Why didn't she win Best Actress?
No, you know, it's just, she was up against Jessica Chastain and Jennifer Lawrence. It was like they...
Damn you, Jennifer Lawrence.
It was a big year for Bit because it was a good, solid act. Like, anyone could have won that year, so... Yeah. But, the Moor is... I remember we saw it at MIFF.
Yeah, we did.
And that was probably the quietest audience I'd ever...
Yeah, it's just this, you know, old couple. One has a stroke, one has to look after the other. It's just... It's intense viewing. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's one of those films you can't really say too much about.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot more to it than just that plot. But
But
it's a film that, like, it could have easily gone for sentimentality. But, you know, Mikhail Haneke, he's not that type of director. If anything, it's kind of is his... He's made a lot of depressing movies, too. His least depressing...
I think these people need some happy pills.
Yeah, exactly.
Seriously.
I think it's his most what's the word I'm looking for? Not commercial or mainstream, accessible.
Maybe.
Yeah, it's at the core, despite as depressing it is, it's still a beautiful love story as well. Between a husband and wife and just sort of what they're going through and everything and it was just an incredibly just powerful film.
Yeah.
One that I haven't seen since it came out, but
I'm not in a hurry to see it again.
Yeah, but I'd say I have a good chance of seeing this one again compared to some of the others we've talked about.
Yeah. Now for you, and I'm still thinking of this movie that I don't know what it is. I
think it will go back to Lars von Trier since we were talking about it.
We love him so much.
Yeah, exactly, because every single one of his movies is just depressing. Is the one, I don't think you've seen this one
I
yet.
I don't think I have.
Is Melancholia, which pretty much sums up the entire movie
in the title.
For those who haven't seen it, it basically is follows two sisters while the world is ending. Because there's this planet called Melancholia that's just been discovered. And it's basically on a collision course with Earth. And it's actually sort of split into two sections because you got this first half where Melancholia, the planet, is not mentioned at all. It's more about Kristen Dunst's character, Wedding Day, with Alexander Skarsgård and what she's going through. Because her character suffers from depression. And it's a very realistic and authentic
portrayal.
Probably
what has put me off from wanting to watch it because it'll probably seem a bit too real.
Yeah. And then the second half is like, this is way after that wedding and everything. And basically, the planet's coming to an end and how everyone's dealing with it. And her sister, played by Charlotte Gainsbourg, they're trying to figure out what to do and everything. And because they're hoping that something will stop the planet. But it's an interesting look at... Because I think what Lars von Trier was exploring with is that people with depression somehow can cope under a massive crisis. Like, everyone, like, around Kristen Dunst's character is kind of freaking out everything about this, but she's just calm, collective, but, you know, she's going through depression, but I guess in a way she's kind of, you know, surprisingly is dealing well with it. I think, I'm probably not explaining it best themes of the film, but, because it has been quite a few years since I've seen it, but there have been great sort of videos that sort of analyze the sort of the themes and everything about the film it's depressing because I mean it's an end of the world movie, so that automatically any movie that deals with that is going to be depressing, but surprisingly it's kind of his least depressing as well, if that makes any sense whatsoever. But depressing is that it's not like there's horrible things happening.
Yeah.
It's mainly towards the end of the film, but it's just mainly how these characters cope with this type of situation. And it's a great film. Kristen Dunst is amazing in it, and visually stunning. It looks incredible. And again, not maybe. I'd say it's more accessible compared.
Yeah.
Like, it's, you can easily watch this one, but I can see this as like a one and done type of deal.
Yeah.
Like, but yeah, it's still a great film and one that's worth checking out for sure. Mm.
Yeah, I'm still struggling with this movie. It's really weird. Why didn't I just write it down? I'll really think of it later. Maybe I'll just write about it later.
like a post-podcast, like.
Yeah. But yeah, no, that's, I guess we had a few bonuses in there, but it was mostly just five picks to make you completely depressed.
Yeah, like, there are still plenty other movies.
Yeah,
like,
we can always do a part two to this.
Yeah, like there's.
Just to destroy everyone's souls, but yeah. Thanks for listening. It's not been a longer podcast as we normally do, because it's just the two of us.
Yeah, I think this is like the shortest podcast we've done in forever. Wow. Yeah.
Just the two of us. Just the two of us. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah.
Nicholas Cage. No, I can't do Nicholas Cage.
I was doing the, like, Dr. Evil kind of work, because he does that. Yeah. Sorry.
All right, so that's a wrap on our podcast.
Yeah, I think for the next one, we'll just do movies that make you feel happy.
Yep, we'll do very happy movies, pick-me-up movies.
Yes.
That'll be our next one to hopefully 2017's a lot better than this year.
Yeah, exactly.
So for those of you listening or first-time listeners or whatever, this is where you can find us. The website is at supermarcy.com. You can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/supermarcy. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/thesupernetwork. All your hate mail can go to Bede. All normal emails can go to marcy@supermarcy.com. And that's Marcy, M-A-R-C-E-Y, because some people spell it wrong or get it wrong all the time.
Are you looking at the king right here when it comes to people getting my name?
Yeah, both of us with our names wrong. You can try following me on Instagram at supermarcy. I may or may not let you follow me. You can always add me on Snapchat, which is supermarcy13. Bede.
Okay. People can find me at my Twitter page at twitter.com/BedeJamine or my Facebook fan page at twitter.com/TerribleOddly. And, of course, you can follow me on Instagram as well. I think it is at Bede. Jemine, I think so.
Yeah.
I could be wrong, so I'll clear it up on the next podcast when we talk about that. And of course, you can find all my weekly writings for supermarcy.com at supermarcy.com.
Yep.
Reviews, articles. I've been a bit slack over the past month because a lot's been going on, as we said earlier. So hopefully, but throughout December, I'll be doing a lot more reviews, written, video, a couple of articles coming up.
Yep.
And also for our listeners out there, if you're interested in the paranormal and the supernatural, listen to my guest appearance on the After Midnight podcast. Well, it's probably 2 weeks out from that, up 2-3 weeks.
Yeah, but you can still listen to it because it's still up.
Yes.
You can get it on iTunes, or you can like the After Midnight podcast on Facebook and Twitter. So big shout out to Denny Lewis. I was also on that podcast.
Yeah, check out Marcy's episode too, guys. It's a great episode as well.
Yep, hopefully I'll be back soon. Hopefully we can get Denny on this show. Keep a listen out. We are planning a Christmas commentary. We will not say a what.
Yeah,
Bede always has his bad movie tweet-a-thons.
Yep.
Mine's
on, this next one's on Never Ending Story 3.
Jesus.
Now I'm depressed.
Yep. So yeah, that's that. Thanks for tuning in once again, and we promise we'll be back soon and not leave it months apart this time.
Yes.
So thank you for listening, and catch you later.
See you guys. Bye.